This is Pod for Ham, a podcast that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time. Every episode will feature different groups of people talking about a track from the original Broadway cast recording of Hamilton. Find us on the web at pod4ham.com, that's the numeral four, and on Twitter at pod4ham, or visit the Incomparable Network at theincomparable.com.
How does a bastard, orphan, son of a whore and a Scotsman, dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean by providence, impoverished and squalor, grow up to be a hero and a scholar?
Welcome to the first track of the first day of the rest of your life listening to the Alexander Hamilton soundtrack and listening to those of us at the Incomparable Network discussing it in exhaustive detail. This is, of course, the network that spent 2 hours on a 80-second trailer for a Star Wars movie. So when we encounter a cast album that we love so much and has become such a phenomenon, it's time for a real deep dive. We are listening to track one of the Hamilton cast album. This is the eponymous Alexander Hamilton. I'm Chip Sutterth.
I'm Monty Ashley.
I'm Lex Friedman.
I'm Andy Anatko.
And I'm Deb Stanish.
And we like Hamilton. I think that's fair to say. You know, I'm sure those of us on our various panels find little things to be critical about along the way. This is not just going to be one big bucket of squee, but...
Oh, it's going to be one big bucket of squee.
It is going to be one big bucket of squee.
It's
going to
be pretty squeeful, I think.
But a dignified analytical squee.
I signed up for that with the understanding that it would be a big bucket of squee. I wore my squee-proof shoes.
Is there anybody on this panel who just doesn't love this musical to bits?
Why would you even ask that? We're devoting like a half hour of, or well, more than that by the time we do editing and things, of our time to talk about one song on a 43 track cast album. I would say that, you know, speaking for myself, and I'm sure I speak for everybody else, that we're all kind of invested in this one.
Yeah, during the chat, like before we actually started, it's like we were like little kids outside a One Direction concert, like talking about. So did you see like the YouTube link from that little from the pre-show thing that he did like at Omaha like in 2008? Oh yeah, we saw that every single. Did you see the genius.com? And oh, of course we read all that. Did you see the YouTube video of the White House? Oh, of course we saw that.
Yeah. Hardcore fans here, I think.
I actually have a saved search on eBay for tricorn hats. and big stupid crowns because the King George songs are my karaoke jam inside the office, and I feel like I now want to be strutting around the office wearing a big stupid heavy crown while I sing those songs.
But do you practice the on point turn that Beyonce praised the actor for during her viewing?
I right-clicked and saved his interview on The Colbert Show where he showed Stephen Colbert, now put one foot in front of the other, do not cross your ankles, pretend like you've got a heavy book on your... Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's rein it back and let's talk about this one track, because if we talk about the whole musical, we'll never get out. I did want to throw out a question. This song, Alexander Hamilton, made its debut in the unusual location many years ago at a White House poetry jam, and it blew the room away. Monty and Lex, you haven't had a whole lot to say just yet. Have you two seen that? And when were you? Was that the first time that you were aware of this song, or did you encounter it when the phenomenon really broke and the cast album came out and all that?
I actually had seen the White House clip well before, like around the time that Lin-Manuel had done that. And it's funny because when you watch him talk about it in interviews after the fact, it's the audience experience he describes very much mirrors my experience as a citizen of the world watching that YouTube clip, where at first he's like, hey, I'm going to do the Alexander Hamilton story here in the way it's meant to be told, which is in rap form. And, you know, the audience is laughing at him, and like the Obamas laugh at him. And then he starts, and, you know, as he progresses, you get more and more into it, and it feels more and more, of course, this is how you should be telling this story. And so, when I saw that, I had no idea, obviously, what his process was at the time, that he was working on what was at one point a mixtape and eventually, a full-blown musical. But I was a fan right away when I saw that clip.
I was a little late to the party in that I didn't hear the Hamilton cast album until maybe a week and a half after it came out. And it took me a couple listens to get into it. And then once I listened to it, I listened to it nonstop. Wrong song. And moved on to looking at all the YouTube clips I could find. And then I found the Poetry Jam one, which was interesting because by then I had gotten used to the longer version where different characters do different lines. But in the White House Poetry Jam, it's all Aaron Burr telling the story.
Yeah. And it's mostly fully formed. There aren't a whole lot of changes other than the fact that the narrators are compressed to just Burr.
Moved in with a cousin. The cousin committed suicide. Left him with nothing but ruined pride. Something new inside, a voice saying, Alex, you gotta fend for yourself. He started retreating and reading every treatise on the shelf. There would have been nothing left to do for someone less astute. He would have been dead or destitute without a cent of restitution. Started working, clerking for his late mother's landlord. Trading sugar cane and rum and other things he can't afford.
But I agree with you. I think the whole concept of Hamilton shouldn't work. It should be a ridiculous parody of a Broadway musical. And that there's a level of discomfort in the room when Miranda announces that that's what he's going to do. And then he just overwhelms the room. And people love this thing. And the remarkable thing about it, about this song and about the way that it worked in just that one place, is this song just goes through like the first couple of chapters of the Ron Chernow biography. This is early stuff that nobody really knows about Alexander Hamilton. It barely scratches the surface of the stuff that he does as a founding father. This is just his childhood. And yet this song is just so utterly compelling anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff you have to set on the table for this first, because if you know Alexander Hamilton, you kind of know him as the guy on the $10 bill. And if they're gonna, if Lin-Manuel is gonna really bring home a lot of the ambition and the tragedy that is to follow, you really do have to lay down his entire background. But the story is not about his childhood. It's not a biopic where you start with his birth and then go into his last moments on Earth. So it really is amazing how it absolutely, literally sets the stage for everything that's going to come. When you look at, of course, we're all looking at the annotations on genius.com.
God bless genius.com.
It's like, I found it like a couple of weeks ago thinking that, oh, I just want to follow along with the lyrics, or at least I haven't seen, of course, because I haven't seen the show. I don't know necessarily who's talking and who's delivering what line, so I just want to see that annotation. But now it's like, 18 hours later, every single notation for every single phrase. And not only do you appreciate that it's giving you all of his history until he joins the revolution, but also how intricate these lyrics are to make sure that you are set up for everything that you're going to see in the next couple of hours, even if it's not explicit. So all leading up to Aaron Burr saying, I'm the damn fool that shot him.
Spoiler alert.
A little bit. It's a little bit. I mean, this isn't the podcast about the whole play, but there are so many things about it that reminded me of Jesus Christ Superstar. Not accidentally, because Lin-Manuel did say that as he was trying to figure out what does he want to do with this material, Jesus Christ Superstar was one of the things that he was thinking about. And the song that opens up Jesus Christ Superstar is also very daring for its time, because it takes Judas, the guy who is responsible for Jesus's arrest, and sets him up as, let's meet him and let's show him a little bit of sympathy, that here's where he's coming from. So the first thing we see from Aaron Burr is that, well, I'm the fool who shot him. Though, just great stuff. You feel like you're ready for this.
there's been so many interviews where Lynn has talked about this process, and he said, you know, reading the book, obviously this is based on, and this song compresses, you know, I haven't lost count of how many pages that this compresses his story into this first song, that he could really, it made so much sense to him to use this musical format, this hip hop format, because it felt very much like an origin story of so many rappers coming out and being successful, you know, coming from really dire circumstances. And while the song hints at those dire circumstances, if you do read the actual biography, I mean, it was grim. It was grim, dark, grim. So it's amazing to me how he took something that is so dry and historical in a lot of people's minds and made it so vibrant and just made you feel not only really badly for Alexander Hamilton, but even though we're not talking about this overall, you do feel that sense of sympathy, like you said, about Aaron Burr. I mean, he comes off as, you know, not this heinous monster that we've all sort of been led to believe historically that he's not a really good person. But you do feel this sense of sympathy as the songs and the whole musical moves forward.
The power of when he was 10, his father split, full of it, dead-ridden.
Mother bedridden, half dead, sitting in their own sick, the scent thick, and Alex got better, but his mother went quick.
That's a gut shot.
Yeah, and you learn more about that in Act Two during Hurricane, but just in case people listening have not read the book themselves, first his father leaves, so his mother is there with her two sons, then she dies, probably holding Hamilton, who's also horribly sick. Then Alexander and his brother get adopted by somebody else who commits suicide a month later. Then a hurricane destroys the entire island they're living on anyway. It's just, it's almost comically over the top how low this guy started.
And then the whole battle for, you know, the assets, you know, the little bit that his mother left him, and, you know, sort of the vitriol of his stepfather. Yeah, it's really awful stuff. I mean, it's hard to read at times.
Yeah, I hadn't read the Hamilton biography when I first heard the soundtrack, and there was parts of it where I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm sure he took a little bit of license to make it fit into the medium he's using, especially when you get down to the later part of the song where he's talked about, oh, he's another immigrant hit in New York, and it's okay, well, fine. Then you look at the notations and you read this biography, and it's just amazing that there is not a single phrase as relevant as it feels to anybody who might be 17, 18, 19, 20 years old in this country or newly come to this country. There is nothing in this song that is not based on historical fact. I think that, as a matter of fact, to what you were saying earlier, I think that the author of that biography said that he was amazed because he had compressed the first 40 pages of his book into one song.
And it's helpful to me. I've only just started reading the Cherno book, and I am seeing it feels more real to me because, frankly, Miranda's given me the cliff notes. Hummable cliff notes, but they're absolutely, it's absolutely true. And then I go back to the biography and I get the details. I get more color, and it's fascinating. Can we talk a little bit about the company performing in this song? Because this song is about Alexander Hamilton, but Hamilton, the character, has very little to do in this except for sing a few lines and walk across a balcony and look impressive.
What I would say actually is what I really like about the song, I think partially to answer your question, is, you know, we are Hamilton enthusiasts, right? And I assume at this point there are people who are like us and have been listening to the soundtrack obsessively and will be able to hum along in their seats and then get elbowed by their seatmates for doing so. But there are other people who are just experiencing the show for the first time when they go to it. Normal people, we'll call them. And I think the song does a really nice job of immediately setting a variety of expectations or, you know, getting you into this musical's world. Obviously, the musical style, but also I think the lyrical style, the fact that, you know, Lin-Manuel very intentionally wanted numerous characters to be portrayed by actors of color, even though they were all Caucasian founding father type people. And, you know, when you are realizing that, you know, that's Thomas Jefferson talking, and that's what he sounds like, and that's what he looks like in the show. And this is even, I would say, the show's kind of, I don't think the show comes at you with a wink, but the show certainly comes at you with a sense of humor and some consistent comfort in, if not breaking the fourth wall, then bending it. And I think the song does a nice job of establishing all those kind of themes that will characterize every element of the show that you're about to see.
And there's also a little bit of foreshadowing there, because Hamilton is not going to survive to tell his own tale. It's the people that are living on after him. Washington, I'm not as hip in my history. I think that isn't Washington the only member of that cast, the only character that actually died before him, and even there was because he was an old man at that point?
Lawrence died before he did. Yeah.
Some of the Act One people die because they're in the American Revolution. What are you going to do?
Okay, sorry.
You know, it's interesting in looking at the Genius lyrics, which is something that, you know, if you, before these, you know, I really fell into these. It was a good song. It was really clever. It really hooked you. But looking at who is assigned to sing which part, and the lines that are assigned to that are so incredibly clever. I mean, you have Jefferson singing about slaves being slaughtered and carted away. And obviously, there's so much controversy with surrounding Jefferson and slave ownership. But even when you get down to the part where you have Mulligan and Madison, who play a dual role, and Lafayette and Jefferson, it's a dual role. You know, we fought with him. Well, they fought with him, and they fought with him literally when you get into the cabinet battles. And Lawrence, who plays his son Phillips, you know, died for him. And, you know, he assigns these dual roles, and they get this dual, they each get like a dual lyric that means two completely different things. And you have, of course, all the women loved him, which if we have any kind of criticisms, I might go into some of the stuff there, but I'm not going to. So it's just the cleverness that he used, and not even, you know, looking at that before you even know what's going to happen, to have that set up for you, and then to be able to go back and like, oh my gosh, this guy is such a brilliant lyricist, to be able to do that's amazing.
Yeah, that's cleverness that doesn't hit you the first time you're watching the show, because you don't know that when Lafayette slash Jefferson says, we fought with him, Lafayette fights on his side with him, and Jefferson fights against him, fights with him.
Right.
So you have to see it happen and watch the whole show and then see it again to go, oh, I get it. He's saying that as both characters. Aren't you clever, Lynn?
Mm-hmm.
He is clever.
Yeah, I like the way that the company in this track especially, they really aren't inhabiting their own characters so much as they're sort of storyteller conduits to the audience. One of the things I love about this musical top to bottom is that it erases the distance between the history and the audience. The characters periodically speak directly to the audience, and this is just, you know, it's a primer, however you pronounce it. The company is talking to you in the seats, or you listening at home in your earphones. This is why this story matters. Let us share it with you.
Yeah, I believe the costumes for the first song, everybody but Burr, of course, is in white to sort of genericify them, if that makes sense. They're not fully their characters. They're people like their characters.
I wasn't aware of that. I've not seen too many clips of this because I've been trying.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. It's one of those weird things where I'm trying not to see too much of the YouTube stuff that's out there, because this is one show that has not been bootlegged as far as I am aware of. And according to my daughter, who is a huge Broadway fan, out of respect for the cast and just the love that people have for this show. And and I'm really curious as to see, when I finally do see it, how all of the things that we take from that cast album, how that's going to apply when watching it. So I've been trying not to see too many YouTube clips and seeing what's been put out there. But the fact that you have, there's no gender roles really when it comes to the ensemble cast, which I really liked. Everybody is a soldier. Everybody is part of the ensemble, and it's another way that they're breaking down sort of that barrier of color that we had talked about earlier, and just making this such an incredibly diverse show.
Any other highlights in this song for you that sort of made you go, wow? Is there a moment in this track that really captures you and pulls you in for the rest of the song?
It's kind of dumb. I don't think this is an official reference or one that's on purpose. I personally really like the line, America sings for you, because regardless of whether it's intended, I take that to be a reference to a now defunct Disneyland ride.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, yeah. I think for me it was in New York, You Can Be a New Man, because that's such this hopeful tone. And it's sort of one of those things that you see in a lot of, you know, different movies and literature, you know, going to the big city and remaking yourself. And it's just such a modern thing to say, because at that time, New York really wasn't all that.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't the greatest city in the world, as it's as it's professed to be throughout the lyrics. But it's how we look at New York now. And even the terms that, you know, he drops the word immigrant so much throughout this. And it's, again, it's that duality of lyrics that make this so clever, in that, you know, obviously immigration is such a huge issue right now and through this political cycle, that, you know, we're talking about something in a very modern, using very modern terms and very modern meanings, and applying them to something historical in a way that feels fresh, but yet feels really authentic.
Lex, Andy, any other favorite points of this track?
For me, you know, Hamilton is basically the best rapper in the show. You know, has the best lyrics most of the time. And, you know, there are other songs that come, you know, soon in the soundtrack that reveal that even more plainly. But for me, when the song really turns it on and shows you the things, like, the obviously the lyrics themselves are excellent from the get-go, but the original pace is very much like the way Fred Flintstone used to rap in ads for vitamins early on, where it's going really slow and patient, you know, like, I love Fruity Pebbles in a major way kind of thing. And when we get to when, and here it's Burr, because Hamilton, as you said, doesn't have a ton to do in this song. But when Burr gets near the end of the song, where there would have been nothing left to do for someone less astute, he would have been dead or destitute without a cent of restitution. That whole section is when the lyrics start coming at you faster and faster, and the internal rhymes start coming at you more. I think there's probably even some alliteration and other fun things happening, but like, that's where the lyrics really, I think, step it up a notch in terms of the pace that they're flying. And that's when, you know, just from my first listening to the song and then to the soundtrack, it's like, well, this is going to get serious now. And that's the one where the song really settled in for me.
That's the point in the original White House performance, when you just see the any tension or uncertainty just melt away, and you know, and President Obama's just got this huge grin, and people are just kind of amazed.
There's an old comic book ad. They all laughed when I sat down to the piano, but then I began to play. And they all laughed when he said, here's a rap song about Alexander Hamilton. Then he gets to that point. Oh, everybody shuts up.
Yeah.
You know, I always wondered, like, that line in Aaron Burr when he says, they think I'm stupid, I'm not stupid. Like, how much of that is drawn from, I'm going to sing a rap about Alexander Hamilton. Everybody goes, yeah, okay.
Andy, what's your highlight of this track?
For me, it's, I'm scrolling through and trying to find specific lines. It's, for me, it's really just the tone of trying to understand that a lot of these figures from history, they're often painted 200 years later as, well, the thing is, these were simple. George Washington was a simple farmer who wanted nothing more than to return to his plow. But the call of liberty was too loud and too strong for him to ignore. And so he gave up his simple farm. And everyone seems to be, again, in high school history, motivated by the interests of liberty and the country. When in truth, the more you read about the more in-depth biographies, you know that these people were very, very driven, sometimes by ambition, sometimes frustration, sometimes by personal demons. And we're not introduced to Alexander Hamilton as, again, one of the fathers of freedom, one of the people who set up the entire system of government and defender of the Constitution. It's no. He's a guy who grew up from nothing, was given no respect by society because he was the son of nobody, inheritor of nothing, and he was determined to make sure that he could make his mark in the world and be given the respect, not that he thought that he'd already earned, but the respect that he was going to earn through his actions. And as we go through it really sheds light on and helps us to understand the songs that follow, that it's possible to want to be part of the revolution and join the army because, again, you hear liberty's call. And it's possible because you realize that, look, if you are not already part of the upper class, the higher classes near the seat of power. One way to get closer to that is to fight in the war and not just simply grab a musket and spend most of your time in the mud behind a stone wall, but be part of, be in command of an army. And he's actually frustrated that he is only the right-hand man of the commanding general of the army instead of someone who commands other people. And all of this groundwork is laid out as someone who's just desperate to get out of these humble beginnings, be in a position of power, and be acknowledged as somebody who is formidable.
What do we think about our other members of the ensemble? Lawrence, Jefferson, Madison, Burr. Any thoughts about the performances?
They're all great.
Yeah,
I actually kind of wish that there were even a clumsy bootleg video of this out there somewhere, because I do each of these voices is amazing. It's sort of like when you see an abstract impressionist and you think that, well, the reason why Picasso drew faces that way is because he didn't have the skills to draw a real face. And then you realize that you see his history, and then you realize that, no, he could have painted in the style of the old masters if he wanted to. He had made the stylistic choice to paint this way. It's not through a lack of skill. It's through deliberate choice. And so sometimes when you hear if there's a prejudice, one of the many prejudices against this style of performance is that, well, you can't sing, so you have to rap. But no, you get all these performers the ability to show the entire portfolio of their skills. And the only problem that I have is that it's hard for me to it's not as though they have one character in an Italian accent, another guy who talks like this. So oftentimes I really wish I had a visual to go for, so I know really who's talking to whom and where things are going from. But it's just such just beautiful music. Even if you didn't, I feel as though even if I didn't understand English, I feel as though I would be playing this over and over again, like I play my favorite, you know, French and Italian and German operas.
When I look at the genius annotations for this song, one of my favorites is if you click on the line for Burr, and me, I'm the damn fool that shot him. There's a tweet from somebody who was sitting next to a person who gasped loudly, who did not know.
You know, it's interesting that I have found, because I have a 15-year-old daughter who absolutely adores this musical. I mean, she's a huge Broadway fan, period. But this musical just captured her soul. And you talk about people like not knowing this. To hear the conversations that she has with her friends, who are also Hamilton fans, about the immediacy of this. And, you know, they did know that Burr and Hamilton were in a duel, but that, you know, they're arguing over the merits of, you know, was Hamilton a problematic fave? Or, you know, what was... you know, was Burr really that much of a jerk? You know, was there anything kind of going on? And they're talking about these historical characters as if they were somebody on a CW television show. You know, they're, you know, actors in a very contemporary thing. So if it's, I can see where somebody would gasp at that if you are not well versed in American history, because it is sort of this dusty anecdote because of Hamilton sort of being buried in the annals of history. But it's, the immediacy that people are feeling about these characters and the passion they're feeling about these characters, as the fan fiction will say, is really stunning. And I love that you're getting those reactions about people that have really been sort of consigned to the dusty back pages of our American history books.
Lex and Monty, any final thoughts on this before we wrap things up and move on to the next track?
I think it's an interesting choice as an opening song for a musical about Hamilton, because like we've said, Hamilton basically just comes out and says his name a couple of times. And yet over the next 45 tracks, there's a lot of Hamilton being the most verbose guy in American theater history. So I think it's interesting that his introduction, it's people talking about him before he steps forward to say, well, the show's called Hamilton, I'm Hamilton, here are a million words.
It's nice to meet you.
Yeah.
What I would say is we've been almost uniformly positive, and we established at the outset mercifully that we're all very big fans. The one criticism I can levy against this song, and it's a recurring theme throughout the show, is I'm actually not a huge fan of either the rhyme or the notion behind the line, there's a million things I haven't done, which we use pretty frequently as a rhyme with Hamilton, and he says it of himself, they say it of him, and I mean, that's true of everybody, right? There's a near infinite amount of things all of us haven't done. And it feels, And I say that, I mean, anybody criticizing Lin-Manuel Miranda's lyrics is an idiot. And so I don't intend to do that. But I feel like it's the kind of thing where, you know, hey, I found a decent rhyme-ish and I'm going to use that a lot. And I don't love that particular lyric. Now, to find any kind of criticism, I want to be very clear. You have to work pretty hard to do it. But that's the one thing that I would say. Like, and my very first time hearing it, even I was questioning that lyric choice because it doesn't quite work for me. But again, I really like it. So don't kill me.
You had to dig really deep for that one, didn't you?
I did.
Well, there's a certain level of playfulness with language that Miranda's doing. You know, I'm sure the next panel, when we get to the next song, will be talking about him with his thesaurus and all the things that rhyme with burr, comma, sir. So he just went through the list and doing that. And, you know, you come to think of it, Lex, you're exactly right. You know, there's a million things I haven't done. It's almost a nonsense sentence.
Yeah.
But I think for his character, it fits, though, because he was so ambitious. I mean, incredibly, burningly ambitious that, you know, probably in his mind, it's not only that there wasn't a million things he hasn't done, there's a million things that he absolutely could do. He had no doubt in his mind that he could accomplish those million things if only he had the time.
Yeah, there's a million things everyone hasn't done. The difference is with Hamilton, he can think of each one of them and they all weigh on him.
It's a difficulty of youth over even middle age, that you feel that you haven't had enough time on this earth to realize that you actually do have time to plan, to think about what happens 5 years from now. Particularly in this story, in this musical, you feel like somebody who feels as though if this is not happening right now, if I'm not, I've got a 6 month plan to be king of the world, and I can't waste a single, that's not enough time. So I've got one day to do it. And when we start talking about the next song, you see a lot of those seeds being put into place.
Andy, you have just reminded me of the girl I liked in high school who told a friend of mine that I'd be really attractive when I was in my 20s.
I did change my hair just to flatter you. I wanted to make sure you gave me as much mic time as everybody else.
Oh, goodness. So we'll find out a lot more about the ambitions of one Alexander Hamilton when we get into the next track, Aaron Burr, Sir. That'll be with our next panel. And you will be hearing from our little group again in a little while when we talk about Right Hand Man. For the Incomparable Radio Network, I'm Chip Sutterth. This is Pod for Ham. And thank you so much for listening with us. I'm so glad that this song was so strong. It encourages us all to keep going with the album, wouldn't you say?
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you next time on Pod for Ham on the Incomparable Network.